Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we end our Stephen King tribute month with the big daddy, the classic 1980s Carrie. Fantastic movie, great director, well done, truly unsettling. And one of history's worst mothers, or best bad mother characters. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this special month, and we appreciate doing all you do. I know this is now November, but figured with Halloween midweek, it would be good to have one more scare. Anyway, thanks for reviewing, thanks for rating, thanks for sharing, and thanks for doing all you do to keep us on the charts. Appreciate you. Bye.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are continuing, we're finishing our Stephen King month by talking about Carrie, 1976, not the other two remakes, which were not worth mentioning. Brian De Palma's first major motion picture and one of Sissy Spacek's first leading roles. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman. On panel, we've got
Charlie Rose,
Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn, who says this is the anti-Matilda.
Moving on.
Be nice to your telekinetics or they might blow up your prom.
This is probably what Matilda was like inspired, right? Because didn't Matilda come out in the 80s?
The book? I don't even remember. The movie's in the 90s, the book, I thought. But yeah, this is some, we'll get to this later, but there was some Roald Dahl level shit in here. Like the over-the-top bullying.
Yeah, the Matilda book came out after this movie. So Matilda, the kids' version of Carrie. this is probably the movie that I don't want to say the least of you have seen of these movies. I don't know, maybe you've seen it, but it's definitely got some of the most iconic scenes that a Stephen King movie has ever put out.
Yeah, pretty much everybody recognizes the bloody prom dress stuff.
Yeah, to the point where it's the album cover, so to speak. It's the Netflix cover. It's whatever, however you guys saw this.
Yeah.
So, Charlie, what are your thoughts on this movie?
I mean, it is actually one of the classic... Well, it's the first Stephen King book that he published.
Right.
Okay. And it was... I think this was actually made 2 years after he published the book.
Yeah, the book. I shared in the Myopia Movies Facebook group. Everyone check that out. Like the press release for Stephen King. And you see him with like Charles... He looks like Charles Mance with a unibrow when it came out. Yeah.
Well, this is also one of the few adaptations that he endorsed. He actually loved.
Yeah.
And that says a lot because, there's some stinkers. But yeah, this is great. This is a great movie.
Yeah. You want to give us the plot a little bit?
Sure. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Basically, it opens... Well, we'll talk about the opening scene a little bit later.
Of course.
But it opens with an introduction to Carrie as a young... girl who is awkward and is rejected by her peers because she dresses funny, she's not seen as conventionally beautiful, and she has a weird, crazy, psycho-religious mother. Right. And as the movie progresses, it's very clearly a classic story of a young girl who is coming into womanhood and having to deal with bullies at school. And, instead of resolving the situation carefully and peacefully with her bullies, she murders everyone in the school.
It's a very cathartic end. It's a happy ending.
Yes, it is.
Except for the jump scare at the end, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of horror on this. In some ways, this is the grandmother of horror. This is the 70s, so it's right before the 80s slasher boom. And we were talking over dinner. It's funny because if this movie had come out 4 years later, there probably would have been 6 Carrie movies because this is before we went to franchise town with everything. And so this is kind of a one and done, nice, tight little movie. A scant 93 minutes. It just flies, but it tells a story very nicely. But in many ways, it still feels like one of those 80s slasher movies because what is it? Well, you have... sex and drugs and drinking, but not from our heroine, Carrie.
True.
And look at Chris's hair.
You gotta help us out. They don't know who Chris is.
Chris, well, the alpha bitch mega bully. Sorry, I do not like her. She's got big 80s hair 4 years early.
Oh, that's 70s. The mean girl.
The archetype mean girl. I think some people think, she's like the inspiration for the whole trope, if you will.
I mean, I'd buy it. The actress is Nancy Allen.
Yes, indeed. And she plays it well. She has that big feathered Farrah Fawcett hair.
Yeah. You know, it's... God, I mean, she'll become a more known actress in the 80s, so this is not a bad place to start. She's in a RoboCop, right?
Yep.
But, you know, in this, what is she? She's the bombshell, right? Yep. She's the one that the guys should are all kind of after. And we'll talk about, like, the prom scene and what's-his-name's actual motivation here. Because I've seen this movie, you know, 3-4 times. Every time I see it, I have a different interpretation on the prom date. I like
exactly.
But, you know, you have this whole, what does it mean to be a teenager? What does it mean to have teenage sexuality? And this is this, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, high school sex stuff. Like, it's, you know, these are...
It's a weird mashup of coming of age and horror.
Puberty is horror.
Literally in this movie, puberty is horror.
And they do a good job with it. And she's a late bloomer, which must have been horrifying when, you know, Debbie Big Tits is in this movie. Because we start out with the most, like, literally a naked scene here. It's the most terrifying you can be. It's the, you know.
So let's take a moment and talk about that scene in depth. Do you mind, Matt?
We're going to have to. Might as well.
Yes.
I mean, this is probably the second most famous scene. So the cold open is a bunch of girls playing volleyball. And Carrie is terrible.
Yeah, and that's how they introduce Carrie as this horrible, awkward teenage girl that none of her peers appreciate or respect. Because, oh, don't hit it to Carrie. She'll mess it up like she always does.
Right.
Etc. I mean, they establish that in, like, the cold open, the first 3 minutes. I think it's, like, literally 3 minutes before they roll into the gym after class is over.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, these people hate her so much. One of the girls walks up and just hits her.
Yep.
I mean, you know, middle class white girls are, you know, brainwashed to be nice, so they're generally mean verbally. How monstrous you have to be to just walk up and slug somebody.
Well, I wouldn't have even said that much. I get the feeling that that teenage girls are passive aggressive to each other constantly. I don't think it's that much different 50 years later. But
my point is, that's pretty extreme behavior to actually just straight up attack someone if you've been sort of brainwashed to be passive aggressive.
I mean, you have to also understand, this is something like the medium demands sort of an over exaggeration of the scenario. So they're going to have that physical altercations. Yeah. Where she literally is physically bullied.
Well, I mean, it's this whole movie is soap opera. Like, there's slaps constantly, and it's the most, like, limp wristed slap makes the loudest sound of it, and it's amazing.
It is like the shock and awe slaps.
I mean, and how many times does Travolta's girlfriend call him a stupid piece of shit? And every time he goes, "Don't call me that," and slaps her, and you're, it's the most satisfying sound.
Yeah,
it's cartoonish. Anyway, after Carrie whiffs the ball, we do get this, what can only be described as a Stephen King shower scene. The whole thing is, like, gray, and it's in like, there's not steam; it's like smoke. It's very strange.
But it's sort of like it's sort of like a cross between a 70s porn and a feminine hygiene ad.
Very much so.
I mean, it's got this soft focus on the girls in the locker room in various states of undress, including quite a few full nudities.
Dude. I mean,
we're talking 70s
bush.
Yeah, I was going to say something a little more subtle, but yes.
No, I mean, there's nothing subtle about what's on screen.
Exactly.
But I mean, and it's funny because it's kind of done on purpose. We'll get to the end of the movie. It's a parallel construction.
Yes.
Where after prom, she gets naked and takes a bath and there's blood in the water again.
Exactly.
And like, it's very good screenwriting because here she's shocked by the fact that she's menstruating.
Yeah.
It's very much like, what is the most cliche way to show that a girl is becoming a woman than having her first period?
I mean, it was
16 or 17.
It was amazing the way they did it because, you know, they had this beautiful floral music that just was sweet. And you imagine it's the type of music that girls would be frolicking on a hillside to. Then all of a sudden, and they close up of her washing herself and they have her legs at... at discrete angles, and then all of a sudden the music stops.
Right.
And all you hear is the sound of the showers, and she pulls up her fingers, and they are bloody.
Right.
And then it goes full Yellow Jackets.
I mean, but... Yes. Yes, it does. But I will say, too, it's De Palma. He's a great director.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, and so it's the kind of shower nozzles, even, that you get in, yes. like... in a gym, but it's extra phallic looking.
Oh, because yeah.
she's looking up, and then there's this cylinder spraying her in the face, and she's like, oh, this soap is so good. Like,
yeah.
Because, and we'll get there, but that's also intentional, because she has no privacy, she's not allowed to be intimate with any guys, so this is the closest she gets in a public shower space, and she's actually touching herself in a non-sexual way, kind of. She's making sure that she's very clean in the crotch, which is something. But the way she loses her goddamn mind because she has no idea what a period is, which is really, that is a school-wide error. If they have so little sex ed, she
has the 70s.
It is, that's true.
I mean, they probably talked about it, but in metaphor, that's you true. Know.
When your garden is in bloom.
Exactly.
Right. And it was narrated by President Kennedy. When she was in elementary school. Hello, when your lady garden is in bloom.
I'm going to be there.
And elementary school and we just took it to a dark place.
It's President Kennedy.
We're talking elementary school here, Quinn. We can. Anyway, so the girls respond by, first of all, she does lose her goddamn mind. She starts screaming.
And she's rushing out and putting her bloody hands all
on people.
On people. Begging for help. And it's sort of like disturbing. It's the whole scene is meant to be a little uncomfortable.
You're supposed to realize she's out of her element. Yes. She's out of her gut. Like, I don't even know what. But the way that the girls respond by just throwing pads and tampons at her.
Yeah.
While screaming, plug it up.
Plug
like
it up.
Like a mean chorus of hyenas.
It's like, oh my God.
It's remarkable. That is.
Yeah, and the girls' gym coach doesn't seem to notice what sounds like either a fight or a lynching going on outside.
She's sleeping one off. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you, because she's just like looking around like, girls, what is going on out here? And she's wearing white shorts, which is even funnier when Carrie comes up and tackles her.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, this is like scandals for 1976.
Right.
I mean, no one has seen anything like this on the screen.
Yeah, and again... The whole thing is supposed to be, it's awkward to be a teenager. They nailed it. Like,
yes.
Also, I was just thinking about how many horror movies we've done and that kind of thing. This is overwhelmingly female. Like, across the board, there's only a couple male characters at all, and only one where there's not women in the scene. It's the three guys in the tuck shop.
Yep.
Which is a very funny scene, which I have a feeling I have not read the book.
So it passes the Bechdel test?
Yeah.
Yeah, on many levels, actually.
So does the song Baby Got Back. Right? Oh, my God, Becky, look at her butt. It's so big. That passes the Bechdel test. Bechdel test doesn't mean a whole lot in this context. But, yeah, it does. However, what this book is supposed to be about is how terrible women are to each other. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. I don't know. There aren't a lot of horror movies like this, you know?
No.
And we were talking about this again at dinner. It's interesting because we like horror. I like horror. Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Halloween are the big heavy hitters. It's amazing rewatching this, how many other movies rip this stuff off. I mean, this clearly rips off the Screams, the Psycho soundtrack. But otherwise, this has a lot of those shots. Like, the creepy, terrified mother is essentially Mama Voorhees. Like, it's interesting the way that they... that this movie isn't talked about in the same vein as those others, and it's probably because it doesn't have 12 sequels. Anyway, from here we go to an incredible scene where the gym teacher and the principal are like, how can she not know what her period is? And he's like, I don't know, I have had 3 scotches today.
And the principal keeps calling her Cassie.
He does.
Well, my favorite part of that is at the beginning when it's just the coach and the principal, and she keeps standing up next to him with her bloody shorts, like, inches from his face.
And she keeps smoking.
Yeah, and, well, of course, it's a 70s, so she's smoking in the office. But his complete, like, painful observation of her bloody shorts and what it represents is so thick. It's so there.
Well, and I mean, and again, it's a scene that if you're of the old enough age, you can smell because he's cleaning out a pipe. She's smoking. Mm-hmm. And again, it's the short shorts. You know, it smells like Teen Spirit or some other cheap, you know, cheap deodorant, right? Like, he smells like Aqua Velva. There's black coffee in the background that's terrible. And then she walks in and destroys the ashtray. And I'm like, ah, yes, the principal's ashtray. It's exactly the bicentennial. Gerald Ford is losing an election somewhere. Like, it's just remarkable. And then the next place we go is, you know, Carrie's walking home. She uses her brain, her mind bullets to knock an asshole kid off a bike who's just skipping school, I guess.
Creepy Carrie, and just looks at him and he just goes tumbling.
Right. But we smash cut to a neighbor's house, a friend of Carrie's mom's, who's just watching.
No, it's Sue Snell's mom.
Right, Sue Snell's mom drinking what we understand to be alcohol while watching her stories. So it's just like a vodka on the rocks inside of a beer glass as she's watching General Hospital or something when Carrie's mom shows up.
And I mean, it's like total shades of Betty Ford.
Oh, it is. And again, you know, she's thin and she's lean because she's taken 3 speed pills, cleaned the whole house already. And so now she gets to watch one day at a time.
and probably smoking too.
Oh, of course. You gotta keep those pounds off. And this is when we're introduced to Mrs. White.
Yes.
Now, we gotta talk. Whoa. We can talk for an hour about this.
She's something else. She's a piece of work.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart in the bad way.
Yeah, thank you. So she dresses like she's a regular at the Renfest. She's wearing these like again, it's like a robe. She's dressed like not a flower child, but like she's a Wiccan, but she's not. She's very much not. But that tells.
Well, it's got vibes of like of homemade clothes,
right? Absolutely.
You know, very much like you know, what you might see in movies about homesteaders and stuff like that.
Well, and this is why it's a good opposition to Sue Snell's mom, who is very much that middle-aged housewife type, right? Because she's wearing the stripes with the big shoulders. She's wearing a vest, right? And you get the kind of extremities of the 70s. Yuppie's more of the 80s, but that's who she is. She's an up-and-comer. She's a mom of a teenager, and she watches her daytime TV in her standard middle-class home in wherever, California. And the Whites live in this weird... I mean, it's not Catholic. It's like old school, like Puritanism with candles and stuff.
It's tough.
It's like the ugliest bits of like hardcore Catholicism and like hardcore Protestant fundamentalism and the Shakers who think all sex is a sin.
Well,
she's a mess.
It is very much a caricature of an evangelical Christian.
Yeah,
and they accomplished what they were going for because, well, Stephen King has a fun relationship with extreme religious zealots.
Well, and what's interesting to me, again, just this is the philosophy of Stephen King. It's like Lovecraft without the racism. Like there's an ancient magic underneath everything, and that different people can channel that magic in different ways. And it's entirely possible that someone using Catholicism tapped into that ancient magic could battle someone who is fighting an ancient magic in the form of an evil, but that's what this is.
Yeah.
So she is fighting Carrie, who is somehow imbued with this power by invoking this God. Like, I appreciate the restraint by not going full Catholic, like old Latin, because then this would just be an exorcist knockoff, which, because they don't, it's not. But at the same time, it's as though she has her own secret Bible. Right? Like,
I think in one of the versions of it, you know, Carrie's like, Mama, that's not actually in the Bible.
Well, she corrects her because she's mixing verses. She's using the Bible to trick people, which she shouldn't, and she's calling her on her bullshit, which is incredible.
Yeah. And I love it. I mean, it's Stephen King's classic, you know, commentary on religious extremism.
Right.
I mean, he does that really well.
He does. So essentially what the mom is doing is question mark. She's busking. She's like asking people if they found God, but She's not associated with the church. They just pay her to leave them alone, is a power move.
Yeah, I'm wondering what she's collecting money for, because this, you're probably going to throw something at me in the book. She basically does people's laundry. We do
see a little bit of that.
So,
I mean, it's a good way to cut that stuff out to tighten the story, because I think this movie is, like I said, it's 93 minutes. It's good and quick. The mom is like, I don't need anything today. She goes, essentially alluded to the fact that she's drunk in the afternoon. And she's like, here's $10. Get out of my house.
Exactly.
So
the mom, played by Piper Laurie.
Yeah.
I think we should actually note that she got a nomination, Academy Award nomination.
She did. She got a nod for this.
Yeah. And so did Sissy Spacek. You know,
much deserved. She also got a nod, Piper Laurie, for Children of a Lesser God as well, and The Hustler from the 60s. She's very good in this, and she got a nod. Daniel's not here, so I'll mention it without him. But she was in Twin Peaks, got two nods as an actress. She's great. It's an insane role, and we also should just mention the filming style of the 70s. There's never a time when there's not Vaseline on the lens. Everything's in soft focus.
Yeah.
The color range here is like dark pastels. I don't know how else to describe it. There's a lot of olive drab. The blues are like powder blued, but since everything has a filter that's dark and fuzzy, it just seems like everything's in a dream state.
Yeah.
Which works. I mean, it feels good. And so... when they use the Dutch angles on her as the mom, she's wearing this kind of black velour cloak, and they're panning up at her to make Sissy Spacek, who actually has all the power in this situation, look powerless. And like, literally, she cracks open a book. Carrie goes upstairs. She changes out of her clothes into other clothes for reasons. And the mom has heard what's happened because...
School called.
And doesn't Susan come home, Snell come home and say, hey, mom, hey, didn't Carrie come home? Whatever.
Yep.
But she essentially rolls up this pamphlet, hits her with it, and starts reading about the sins of women.
Yes.
Sin was, and it's a cause.
She's... If you had not sinned, you would not have gotten your period, which is right out of the Macaulay Culkin handbook. Like, that just seems like something that, the mother of a child actress would yell at her. Like, it's incredible. I'm Glad My Mom's Dead by the woman from iCarly. It's a new book that just came out. Incredible read. Incredible read.
All right.
Janet, whatever her name is. Very good. Anyway. So then Jesus makes a cameo appearance.
Creepiest Jesus ever.
With a fro.
Well, first, we have the
with
Jesus.
With glowing eyes.
Well, that's not Jesus. As a Catholic, I can tell you, that's Saint Sebastian with the arrows in him. The guy crucified with the arrows is Saint Sebastian. I'm talking about over the dinner table, there's a tapestry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And then everywhere, there's pictures of Jesus and Jesus and Jesus and Jesus. It's insane. But when Carrie does wrong, she gets locked in, I guess it's a broom closet.
Yep.
And there is a statue of Saint Sebastian pierced by the arrows with his eyes glowing, which again, foreshadowing to an incredible scene.
But then eventually, I mean, the metaphor stands. She claims her womanhood. She claims her power. And she fights back.
Well, and I mean, and again, that's why the different parts of this are so important. Because if you're doing film, like, or even writing, what do you do? Well, she changes out of the clothes. She tries to start fresh, but immediately she's reminded by her mother that she's evil. And her mom, being holier than thou, it's funny because she's halfway to wearing a nun's habit, but gets it kind of wrong. So when she takes out the pamphlet and hits her with it and says, you're a woman, you need to act like a woman, and you must have sinned by having intercourse or whatever, and locks her in to... pray at the foot of a man, right? Like, it's all there. And Saint Sebastian is, it's so funny because he looks like Weird Al in gummy form. Like, because it's like Play-Doh, man. Like, it's all melty and droopy. And he kind of has this, he looks more drunk than dead. And those eyes are glowing
those
in the closet.
Eyes.
It's just, there's a lot of strong choices.
I had nightmares about those eyes for years. Because,
really?
You know, I watched this, like, when I was... Hold up. I want to say sixth grade. Yes, I watched it when I was in sixth grade.
Okay.
And so, it did a number on me.
Well, and God, I tell you what, man, we talk about this all the time. I watched, this is left field, but we were talking about in class 3 Mile Island, and I was like, hey, wife, did you know that there was a movie that came out about this happening that they thought was ridiculous in 3 Mile Island happened 2 weeks later? And she's like, what are you talking about? So you watched The China Syndrome.
Oh,
great film, right? But that slow 70s potboiler, mm-hmm. you know, like where there's little action, building and building and building until it explodes. That's what this is. Other than the very beginning, like the shower screaming scene, she uses her powers in very subtle ways. It's almost a teen comedy, right? Yep. It's practically She's All That for most of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, it's just, they don't make movies where you have to pay attention and just enjoy the slowness in the building. And again, you're right. That St. Sebastian scene is very subtle. But, like, Amityville Horror would be hitting you over the head with it, and it would be making a weird whistling note. I don't know. Here, it's just glowing, and she's crying as she's praying at the foot of it, and her mom is angrily knitting outside, right? Like, it's so much better that way.
It is. I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, the horror, I mean, like most Stephen King novels yeah. and stories, the horror is the people. I mean,
those other people.
It's the other people. It is the evil that other people do when they realize things are not going the way they expect them to. You know, that's where Stephen King excels. And of course, you know, tying that to a religious scenario, man, scarred me. Absolutely scarred me. I grew up in a very religious town. Extremely religious. So this was just horrifying on so many levels. I even read the book, actually.
Yeah, I've read the book, too. In the book, the prayer closet is much more grotesque.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, and there's also something to be said just about the very nature of her saying, like, because the mom is, like, holier than thou. She's correcting the town. And this is happening in her own house. And it reminds me of when televangelists say that gay people are the reason there's earthquakes. Yeah. Right. Like, so rather than saying, oh, maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way, I should embrace my daughter. She's like, well, the devil's testing me. And now I've got to pray this away. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that the book goes into detail and they hint upon it. But her father, Carrie's father and Margaret's husband was a philanderer and was an alcoholic and would spend all his time out drinking and, you know, courting the women and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's why Carrie, too, has her half-sister, because Mr. White was screwing around.
Right. Ugh.
And the gene came again.
That was something else. Anyway.
I'm just saying that.
Won't talk about this.
I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
I heard it was bad.
It was bad.
Okay. I'm just saying what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah.
But
it's basically, in the era of the craft, they remake Carrie. So you can just sort of draw your own conclusions.
Well, and so what's interesting to me, I mean, it's a tragic stew, but we essentially get out of the mother in what's a very cartoonish image, as though she had sex the one time and right, and then the father ran away, like,
yeah,
and then he took me, and you're just like, guys, what are we doing?
And this isn't in the movie, but it is in the book. That Margaret's mother had telekinesis, and she went prematurely senile and was terrorizing the family with it. So that's why Margaret gets so squirrely. In addition to the "oh, she's a witch" religious nonsense.
Interesting.
This brings back.
I will say that this is better.
Well, yeah, because if she's got PTSD herself from scary grandma, you might feel sorry for her. No, she in the movie she's a bitch.
Well, it's about religious fundamentalism.
Yep.
Right. Like. Because what she should do is embrace her child, and instead she literally tries to murder her child, which is not the answer, generally.
So let's pick back up with... let's pick back up after, the day after, the big tampon fest.
Oh, tampon fest.
Okay. So basically all the girls who were involved get detention, and that's where the plot starts to really kick into place.
Because we have the longest calisthenics sequence known to man. And well, with a scene where you
don't get me wrong, they totally leaned into the male gaze on this movie.
Of course they did.
And you see Miss Collins like walking a line of girls with shots of her feet. And so I'm like, so is Quentin Tarantino the unit director or something?
She was wearing shoes and socks. So
there you go.
But
one brief scene I should mention just before we go too far. Mm-hmm. Mr. Fromm, they're all in a room and they're reading poetry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and it just becomes crucial later. Who's the boy? Tommy?
Tommy.
Yeah.
Played by William Catt.
Played by William Catt. And Sidney Lasik plays Mr. Fromm, who the year before was Cricket in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes.
Yeah. But essentially, it's an English class. They read one of the kids' poems. It turns out to be Tommy's. And Carrie likes it. It's not bad. It's very, someone read Ginsberg and is doing Ginsberg. But, yeah. You know, it is what it is. And they were asking for comments and criticisms. Carrie likes it. And, I mean, best we can tell is just kind of laughing. He's charmed by it because he's a jock and doesn't think he's good at this stuff.
And the English teacher's like, beautiful? Is that all you have? I mean, he is such an asshole.
Well, it's not exactly criticism.
Maybe could just say, could you add to that? But no, he's just so mean about it.
He's been drinking all day.
Exactly. Probably. He's so mean about it. I mean, the only teacher worth a damn in this movie is the gym coach.
Yeah, she cares. She's a bully, but she cares.
I love how they just sort of really just lay it on thick that the 70s were just problematic all around.
Right. Because, I mean, like, you like the coach because she stood up for Carrie. But for the rest of the girls, she was a monster. Can you imagine if you caught a kid and you were mad at a group of kids, and then you punished them physically, slapping several of them?
Yeah, and then, like, full open-handed slap. You are gone. You are no longer employed.
Like, because she slapped several of these girls, like, public.
I thought she only slapped Chris, because Chris obviously was coming up on her trying to make them all walk out of detention.
No. She slapped at least two others. But I mean, regardless, you don't slap even the one kid.
Yeah, exactly.
She doesn't become a hero for slapping children.
Children? 16, 17-year-olds are children now?
Legally, I mean, in the eyes of the law.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, it is a moment in time in the 70s where corporal punishment was a thing in
schools.
Who's
the girl who's dressed up like Mario the whole time? The one wearing the red shirt and the overalls and the hat.
You know what?
A lot of these girls are dressed, they look like they're middle-aged.
They are. Sissy Spacek, I think, is 26 in this when this is made. Somewhere in there. But anyway, so you know, the gym teacher decides to punish these girls physically, as was the style at the time.
By making them do calisthenics for an hour.
Yeah, as punishment.
But, I think that was Edie McClurg.
Oh, that might be.
I'm pretty sure that was Edie McClurg. Helen?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh my god.
I mean, and PJ Souls is in this as well.
What?
From Halloween and Rock and Roll High School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's crazy. But so the next day, you know, they're all given their punishment for throwing tampons at a poor girl. And told that basically they have to have detention where they're going to be put through their paces, doing physical labor.
Right.
And if they don't do it, they will forfeit the right to go to prom.
That's right. This is also around the time when Tommy and his girlfriend come up with the idea to ask Carrie to prom.
Yes.
Yeah, because Chris is trying to lead like a mutiny of the girls to all walk out of detention. You know, we shall overcome type stuff. And Sue, the dark haired girl, is like, Chris, just stop it. You know, she knows they earned that.
You know, basically, that's the thing. Sue is portrayed as someone who realizes, oh, we did something terrible. I actually have a conscience. I'm going to try and fix this. Now, that said, I thought that the character of Sue Snell was very underdeveloped in the movie. I mean, she was a one-note wonder of, I'm going to try and get my boyfriend to make it up to Carrie.
Well, and the end game is in question because you guys know how this ends. The blood bucket. Well, there's 20 minutes after that, but that's the apex of the plot.
Yeah.
She's kind of not aware that that's going to happen, but that's murky. And then she tries to stop it, and then that's when she gets slapped by the gym coach, who shoves her through the door and throws her against a wall, even though she was right to try to save everyone.
Yep.
But, yeah, I guess that's why the gym teacher died. You shouldn't touch people! a lesson that all the adults need to learn in this. Don't touch people!
So she tries to be good, whereas all the other girls are just completely reprehensible and mean girls.
Yeah.
Mean girling all over the place. Tommy, who is, of course, you know, very genuine. He's fully into this. He's got a heart. He's portrayed as someone also with a conscience. So when he asks out Carrie, he totally gets into it. And he's like, I'm going to make sure this girl has a good time.
Right.
And not in some, you know, lascivious way, like actually genuinely, he wants to make sure that she has a good memory.
And he, I mean, I think he likes her.
Yeah. Like, I think he thinks that she's a nice girl who actually has a good personality.
And like, we'll get there. We do need to introduce the best character, which is Billy Nolan or John Travolta. God. Yeah. Hey, geez, guys.
Oh, yeah. Evil boy. John Travolta. That's what I was calling.
No.
He's Dr.
criminally, like, idiotic guy.
Alcoholic John Travolta, yeah, I would say.
No, I mean, so that's the thing. In the book, you know, this character is, like, truly, like, a monster and evil. But in the actual, like, movie, he's, like, some little, like, plaything of Chris. And he's just portrayed as this idiot who keeps getting, you know, bossed around.
Yeah, and the way that the script portrays him, the way he plays it, it's as though like he doesn't want to be called a loser. He's Marty McFly in the second movie, and so if they called him a chicken, he'd be like, all right, well, I guess I'm gonna dive off this cliff first, right? Like, that's what it is. It's he's dumb and susceptible to peer pressure. We're introduced to him, like, he's in several scenes because there's classroom scenes, but we're really introduced to him drunk driving down the road and being an asshole. Although my favorite part is him, alongside him, another wood paneled station wagon pulls up and they just hand him a silver bullet.
I know, right?
And he's like, hey, thanks. And he's drinking a beer that was just handed to him.
The 70s.
And then the next is a group of four girls who are all flirting with him. Well, his girlfriend's in the car. He's like, ladies. And then the third car is a cop car. And he drops the beer in his girlfriend's lap. It's perfect. It's just, you get his whole character immediately.
That's all you need to know about that character.
Well, and again, it could be in like an Italian film and you'd still get it, right? Like, it's such perfect. Something we don't talk enough about, because this is a podcast that's not really a movie making podcast. It's just us jerking around talking about movies. This is so well directed.
Yeah.
Like, because the camera is just over the shoulder. They're just like, hey, let's drink. And it's like, drinking's good. And like, and she's doing her makeup the whole time because she doesn't actually like him, but she's hot. He's hot. So of course they're together. It's such a high school thing.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
It's so well done here. And then the cops would like flash the flashlight. It's like, officers? Because he's also just kind of a dumb shit.
Yep.
It's so good.
And Chris calls him a moron a couple times and he slaps her.
And that's and so they go to...
The 70s.
They go to like a dive bar whose name I'm forgetting, but it's... Kelso's place or something like that, and she decides to go down on him in the parking lot.
Well, that's the best part. It's like, he's like, I mean, she's clearly going down on him, and she's like saying all these things, like, and she just says, I hate Carrie White.
And she can speak pretty clearly with something in her mouth.
And he's like, you know, obviously having a good time. He's like, wait, what? Who? And it was just like the perfect scene.
It's just because I forget the order of these things. This came out around when Animal House did.
Yeah.
And like the idea of a distracted blowjob scene is just so funny.
Well, I mean, it's Brian De Palma being a genius, keeping it a tight 93 minutes and showing, not telling. And what he does is basically shows just how wrapped around her finger he really is.
But also how little this matters to anyone else.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Because he's like, what are you even talking about? And you'd think it's his girlfriend, he would know something at all. But no, because this doesn't matter, but it's become her obsession, which is also a very Stephen King thing, the idea of obsession.
Yep.
But so to illustrate this, like they get in like a slap fight in the car. They're outside Kelso's. They mm-hmm. should be getting drunk because it's the 70s and you could drink at probably 16 or whatever Nancy Reagan has decided this week. Like it's such ridiculousness because remember these are, I mean, Travolta had been in things before. This comes out the same year as The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, which if you have not seen, woo!
That's something else.
It is. But he was a TV star at this point because Welcome Back, Kotter was on.
Yep.
And he was essentially playing this, but for ABC.
Yeah, and it was before his big break in movies.
Right, which is the late 70s, which is Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever.
78? 79?
78.
78. Which, again, even in this, he's got that, like, Travolta charisma. Like, I mean, he's been in some shit movies lately, but when he shows up, I'm like... There he is, Travolta. Exactly.
Previous episode, Battlefield Earth. That was shit.
Yeah. Ugh. It's awful.
That is awful.
But, I mean, it's something you can't learn. He has charisma. And when he shows up, I'm just like, I've got to watch this guy with the weird chin. Like, he just got to do it.
And I'm imagining him calling Chris Ratbrain.
You Ratbrain? The next scene is, it's, I guess, Tommy's meet cute. She's going through this bookstore / library.
Yeah.
Grabbing books like... What about creepy chicks? The Manson family. This looks useful. Like
she's researching telekinesis.
Like, yeah, this is the moment where she's like realizing something's up. I can move things or make things happen with my mind. And she starts to research it.
Oh, Ted Bundy, look.
Yeah, it is a little bit questionable.
Well, because she's got her hair part in the middle. It's long and this like tall, handsome guy's like, hey, what are you doing here? But anyway, he's like, so I read books. This Shel Silverstein is pretty sharp. Would you like to go to prom with me?
And of course she does it. She thinks that he is being cruel.
She thinks, and I understand why.
Yep.
This is a prank.
She thinks it's a prank. And it's just, it's really telling that narrative of how she really is an outsider. She really is awkward. And she lives in fear. She has no one. She has no support structure.
Well, and it's part of Lee, also the parents keeping, or her mother keeping people away from her.
Like, yep.
Again, like the idea that she's that age and she hasn't even been alone with a guy.
Yeah.
Like, not even doing something funny. Like, the idea that they would, like, go for a walk through the neighborhood holding hands. A common experience by sixth or seventh grade. She's not even close.
Yeah.
You know, God, when Tommy is about to ask her out, she says no and runs out. She's sitting on a bench in like an alcove in the shadow and the gym teacher's like, so what's going on? Tommy asked me to prom. Oh, good. Thank God you're normal. And like, it's just,
exactly.
Because I think at one point, Mrs. Collins takes Sue and Tom aside and is like, is this a trick? She has a come to Jesus talk with her about
that. Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, they really, that's where you realize that it's legit and she's trying to be nice. It's telling that story right there.
Well, and just, it's the interesting thing is, how do I put this? Laurie Strode in Halloween is not a prude. She's just someone who hasn't gotten there yet. And you get the feeling that Carrie is like afraid of even making out, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, and that's a distinction. There's a difference between, again, like Jamie Lee Curtis, who, I mean, again, Sissy Spacek is not like a chud person. She's a beautiful woman. Jamie Lee Curtis is a beautiful woman. the idea that she hasn't hooked up yet is something that she said she's waiting on the right guy, yada, yada, yada.
Well,
Carrie is like afraid of physical contact.
I mean, given that she didn't know what a period was, she probably thinks that kissing a boy makes you pregnant.
Right. And I mean, but that's such a good, subtle way to show this.
Exactly.
Right? Like, she's not the virginal character because she's going to survive, and she's just so interested in being a babysitter like Laurie Strode. She's actually afraid of this. It's an interesting twist on an old theme, mm-hmm. right? In the morality play.
Yeah, she's not being moral. She's being afraid. Terrified.
Which to her mom's point, is the same kind of thing. Sinning makes you evil, but what if being afraid of sinning is not the same thing? Right? Like,
yeah.
It's that too. Like, it's sin by abstraction. It's interesting how they construct this character, because the teacher's like, oh, great, you get to go to prom. You better... And she goes to the people. You better not be fucking with her.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
It's so intense. It's amazing. Meanwhile, this is all in a dimly lit drab room. We can make fun of Seven all we want. He watched this movie. Like, everything is kind of green and off color. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
It's great. I just... And so now we've got to get into some... character motivations, which are not explicitly said. I think they're trying to do something nice for Carrie, and he honestly finds her to be a lovely person, and they have a kiss at the end, and had the bucket not dropped, it's just another sweet teen movie.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you're right, and I think that part of it, I think that's important to set up that scene where he reads his poetry and she comments on it.
Yeah.
Because I think that sort of tells that story that, oh, this girl liked me for liked my poem without, like, you know, really getting into the fact that it was me.
Right. And it's done in a well-written way, which is that it is an awkward moment because you don't just say, you're beautiful. But it is also an actual emotional moment, right?
Yeah.
They think she's weird because she doesn't have normal emotions, but it's because she is so repressed in a classic, you know, 1950s Cold War sexual repression kind of way.
Yep.
After the summer of love, it feels weird. So she said beautiful. That's not what you should say.
Yeah.
Like, they were shocked she had an emotion. And I think that Tommy, who we are introduced to him laughing like he's the Joker, but it's because he's actually 35 and has crow's feet. And so, like, eventually he softens and he's just like, no, she's just a girl, man. Like, she's just a nice person.
Yep.
And they convince the gym teacher somehow.
That they're well, you know, they do a good job being earnest and convincing her. And then we move into the phase where everyone's getting ready for prom.
Dude. And they have so much padding in that, like the tuxedo scene in the store.
Yeah. I love that tuxedo scene, man.
That's a great scene.
While we're here, we should mention that Tommy is making sure, like, we are actually going to prom, right? Because, like, he shows up in his old, like, Bronco and, like, shows up at her door and he's like, hey, babe, we're going to prom, right? And she's like, get the fuck out of here. Like, she's terrified that their mom will see
him. Yeah, because that's my comment. You know, generally, it's not a good day to keep asking a girl out if she turns you down. But this is pretty obviously a hostage situation
with
her freaking mom.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's like, hey, babe, what's up? And she's like, pressed up against the screen. And she's like, get out of here. She's praying.
She agrees to go so that he will leave.
Yeah.
Is this before or after Carrie makes all the doors close in the house and mom realizes, I better back off?
Well, that was before. And then right after, it's sort of interspersed between the prom preparations and her getting asked. She tells her mom she was invited to the prom. She, of course, reacts poorly. And then Carrie goes and uses her powers and then tells her mom she has these. She's got telekinesis.
Right.
And, of course, this is where we see the initial phase of her mom setting up that this is the power of the devil and Carrie trying to rationalize it, saying, no, it's called telekinesis. It's a thing.
Yeah, whatever bookstore or library she was in had a good paranormal section.
The Stephen King section.
Well, I mean, this is also the world of Stephen King, and telekinetics and telepaths are a dime a dozen.
That's right.
Yeah, at least the shop hasn't showed up yet.
That's true. We should also mention around here, this is when we go to the butcher shop.
Yeah, because Chris Billy is that evil John Travolta.
Yep.
And some crony hanger-on are breaking into a slaughterhouse
to get some pig's blood.
They straight up kill a pig. And, you know, one of my comments in this was, this movie would have a much happier ending if the pigs just ate them right now. Because pigs will eat people.
Like, God, was that Hannibal?
Hannibal, the second one, Hannibal,
Yeah.
Like, my grandmother told me a story about someone who fell asleep plowing his field up in Missouri or something, and some pigs came out of the woods and ate him.
All right. That's
now,
that's a nice...
make sure you don't fall asleep in any fields or a pig will eat you.
I mean, that does sound like a cautionary tale to me.
And Br'er Rabbit got eaten by a pig. That's really something.
Yeah, so they kill a pig to drain its blood for purposes we will see later.
Yeah. And this is very Frankenstein. Like, it's illuminated by lightning. Like,
It is under the cover of night. There's a storm.
Hey, you stupid piece of shit. Are you getting all the blood? Like, it's just, they hate each other too. It's great.
Yeah.
I think the other kid is named Freddy.
Is that
the kid?
I think so.
But yeah.
It sounds like they're trying to psych each other up into killing the pig, because they don't just do it right away.
Because none of them are farm boys. Around here, too.
And then she's like chanting, you know, when he's killing the pig with a hammer.
She's like gleeful about all this because she knows that it's going to be this epic, you know, revenge fantasy. Ooh, bless her heart.
Oh, bless her heart. So they fill the bucket with blood. And from here, we go to the dinner scene where Carrie says, I'm going to go to prom with Tommy.
Exactly.
And it's illuminated completely by candles. Mm-hmm. And like, we have the tapestry of the Last Supper on the wall, and they're eating what I imagine is just sadness and SpaghettiOs. Mm-hmm. And she just grabs Carrie by her, like, I don't know, her bangs, and just starts screaming in her face about how if a boy touches you, you can get pregnant.
And it's not yet, but soon. Soon there'll be the dirty pillows.
The dirty pillows.
Is that when Carrie's like, Mom, everyone in town knows Dad left you for another woman?
Yes, which is amazing.
Yes.
Which is like, we get it, you suck, and Dad left you, and calm the fuck down. It's remarkable. Because remember, like, this is also a part of, you know, womanhood, I guess, or adulthood, of being able to stand up to your parents.
Exactly.
And, like, that's kind of the thing. And she's like, look.
Totally a coming of age.
And she's like, look, I have magic and you're a bitch. So, your dad left you because you were being awful. And I don't know why he left me, but it's all on you. Meanwhile, Travolta's, like, squeezing the last drops out of a pig. Like, it's just, the stories here, just like, trucking along. It's remarkable.
Oh, yeah. No. But, and then, of course, you know, we get to the next day. It's the final day before the prom, right?
Right. And the only other thing, we get the guys getting tuxes, the girls getting their dresses.
Yep.
They're getting, I had an honest laugh, the girls are getting their hair did.
Yep.
And they're getting perms. And the girl who always wears the Mario hat is on top of the little plastic dome of the hair dryer, which is great. We also have, I guess, to further the plot, the hanger-on dude, I think we decided his name was Freddy, goes up to the nerd guy who's from student government to say, hey, can I help you count the ballots? Which we'll get to.
We'll get to.
Meanwhile, the girls are decorating, of course, the gym for prom for the enchantment all upon the sea dance or whatever it's going to be.
Enchantment under the sea, is that what it is?
Kinda. There's stars, there's blue.
It's not, it's a generic prom, but yeah, I like the idea that it's an enchantment under the sea.
Yeah, of course.
With pig's blood.
It's either that or a Great Gatsby party, right?
Right, exactly.
Something with a little class.
But it is clearly a prom.
It is very much a prom. but yeah, I mean, the way this works, we have, you know, Tommy and his goons are trying on tuxes. And I will say, the tux Tommy ends up with is like...
Oh, it's gray, spectacular. It's satin.
There's ruffles on top of the ruffles.
There's ruffles upon ruffles.
This is like escape from disco hell clothing. Dude,
and we all remember that Ford tie surplus that everyone had where the lapels were out to here.
Yep.
And the bow ties were bigger than a wallet.
It was beautiful.
Meanwhile, the littlest buddy is dressed like he's a background singer for Richie and the Valens. And then the loser, the guy who's the Shaggy reject, is wearing a tuxedo t-shirt. And God bless him, I wanted that long sleeve t-shirt so bad. I was like,
I mean, it's classic. I mean, this is where, you know, he just captures teenage life so well.
And meanwhile, at some point, isn't Carrie making her own prom dress while mom is sitting there fuming?
Yes, exactly.
Well, and we get this great scene where she's trying on lipstick and makeup samples because she can't afford makeup. And so she's essentially at the Macy's counter just doing it, which they'll give you the makeover, but
yeah.
She doesn't want other people to touch her. It's a great choice. But when she's actually putting on her dress and putting on her makeup back in her apartment, I forget the name of them. Is it Norma Desmond who's like, I was in movies with Hitchcock, and she's just an old lady like putting the makeup on?
Yeah.
Because like the dress she made, and again, if you made it yourself, it looks great, but it's almost a nightie. It's like satin, mm-hmm. and it's long, and it's not like super tight, but it's fairly sheer. And she, you know, and she has the long flat hair. It's a very 70s look. I mean, my mom had that kind of long flat hair in the 70s. But it's so much like, and like Matt said, in the corner, her mom's like, you look like a whore. And here's the thing. Maybe he's not going to show up. You know what? He's not even going to show up. And if he does show up, I'll tell him you're sick. And she's like, Mom, I'm trying to get some of this. So you got to cool.
She telekinetically sits her down twice.
Twice.
Which again, power move.
Which, and her mom warns her about everyone seeing her dirty pillows.
Which, I mean, first of all. It's Sissy Spacek. It's not like they're busting out. Although at the end of the movie, like, that's something.
Yes.
But secondly, it's for her body type. It's a very modest dress, mm-hmm. and that's why it's funny.
Well, yeah, and I think that's actually a very good thing because they're not showing her as busting out wild.
Right.
They're showing her, you know, inching into a standard high school life.
Right. And it's something that they do well in this movie, which is that teaching high school myself, it's weird because you'll have kids who are in ninth grade who look like they're 7. And then kids who are seniors who look like they're 25. And like in between, that's where everyone fits.
Yeah.
And so she has a very like she's 26. She looks like she's 16. She has a very small figure. And so the idea that she's busting out all over the place and the mom is uncomfortable, it's only because the woman wears, like, blankets wherever she goes.
True.
And
layers upon layers
upon layers upon layers. And, like, we see that. We've had the shower scene where we see that she looks like she's less developed than everyone else already. And so the fact that the mom is freaking out here, it's been portrayed over and over again. And this is about when we realize it's filmed in the same high school that Back to the Future is. Because when they go up those back stairs, I'm just like, Marty is running in the background and punching Biff, which, you know, fine.
There you go.
That's where we are. Meanwhile, the enchantment all upon the moon dance is going in full swing. We even have a similar parking scene to Back to the Future where she's like, I don't know, man. Just the roles are flipped. He's like, we should go in and dance. And he's like, oh, geez, I don't know. And he keeps trying to kiss her on the cheek. It's not like he's going in for like, he's just like,
no, he's being sweet.
He's being a gentleman.
And the gym teacher is telling Carrie all about her prom experience, including like breaking down, having to walk a mile in heels.
Oh, they ran a train on me.
During the Depression.
Oh, she's not all that old. Oh, Ike was in the White House and they could run a train on me. But yeah, so we have this cover band. I said a cover bland. That's about right.
Yeah, kind of.
Playing the Mamas and the Papas and the Carpenters and everyone's discoing.
And they cut to the pig blood bucket. And Megan, not Megan, it's Chris, like, lurking under the prom stage looking evil.
This is like the biggest tension setup ever. Like, it felt like forever that you kept glancing at the bucket, watching it wobble, you know, going back and forth. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going
to
happen.
It's establish, like, establish. So what's supposed to happen is they're dancing. He finally gets her out onto the dance floor. But at the break before the last whatever, they're supposed to vote on who the prom king and queen are.
They're supposed to count the votes.
Well, I think they're actually voting.
There's actually like a standee on the table.
They are voting.
And she's surprised that they're there. And he goes, let's just vote for us. And they have a little mark for themselves. And it's a sweet moment because she's supposed to actually feel good about how she looks. And he's like, you deserve to feel good about how she looks.
Because she seems so happy in this whole sequence.
Yeah, that's the best part is that, you know, she's happy. He's clearly treating her right. I mean, he's genuine. This is like everything is going perfectly.
And everything is going perfectly.
And but I also like how, like, back home, the girls who aren't allowed to go to prom because for whatever reason.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, no, it's time for me to go for some reason. Bye, Mom. Whatever.
Yeah, because you can't go to the prom without a date, so Sue is staying home.
Right.
And meanwhile, Mrs. White is cutting carrots and then cutting the board and, prattling on about not allowing a witch to live.
Suffer not a witch to live.
Suffer not a witch to live. So now we're kind of into the finale-ish, even though there's like 30 minutes left of this movie at this point because it doesn't want to end, and we don't want it to end.
Well, no, I mean, it's great pacing.
Yeah. We have the most 70s dance scene ever where we're underneath them. It's gauzy. They're spinning around and the camera's spinning the other direction. And they're about to kiss. They don't kiss. They're about to kiss. They don't kiss. And then they announce the prom king and queen. They put out these sparkly, glittery chairs with flowers and I think stars coming out the back. And they announce that it's Tommy and Carrie. And she's honestly incredibly happy. Now,
yes.
We don't know what's gone on because the ballots were collected and hidden. Mm-hmm. And the guy with the bad hat making out with the girl with the other bad hat has a bunch of fake ballots that are supposed to elect Tommy and Carrie.
Exactly, because that's part of the plan. They need Carrie on the stage under the bucket.
Yeah. And when it happens, the entire movie goes into slow motion.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is.
I think this is all from Carrie's point of view. At this point, she just breaks.
Well, I would say at this point, this is her dream come true. She's got a handsome guy. Everyone's clapping for her. She's the hero.
Exactly.
And she is filmed with like a 40-watt bulb under her face. Like, because she's glowing.
She is glowing. She's glowing. She's happy. You could feel the happiness. The music, the tone. Just the cinematography says happiness.
Well, and the teachers are clapping. Everyone's clapping for her. It's that kind of crowded scene satire you get where everyone who's ever been in the movie is there and they're all happy for you.
Yes.
And guess what? Her mom was wrong.
Right? Her mom was wrong. They are not going to all laugh at you.
And then we see two little sets of eyes from underneath the stage. One is drunk because it's John Travolta. And the other one is his girlfriend.
The evil, conniving bitch.
Which is, and this just, and like Matt was alluding to, and you can read his tweets where he goes on for 6 tweets about how long this is taking.
And it's true. It really is a long time.
Yeah, because I know that you got to establish tension, you know, dun, 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 dun. Like I said, this is almost like a shark attack because I know it's coming, but it's taking forever to get there.
And you know, we know this. We've known this since like minute 45 of the movie that this is going to happen.
Right.
Okay. And we're seeing this. We keep seeing the bucket. We keep seeing, you know, Chris. We keep seeing Carrie. And then, of course, now all of a sudden someone else sees it. Sue Snell sees it.
But she's not supposed to be there. So exactly. Coach Collins detains her.
Because she's trying to warn Carrie.
Yeah. Snell is trying to do everything right. And the coach tackles the shit out of her.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. She's so wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Especially since she's at this point realized that Sue is not. She knows Sue and Tommy are trying to help. So I'm not sure why she.
She just wanted to slap another woman.
I guess.
It's so satisfying. But every. Like, and again, Carrie's in the center. She's got the tiara on. She's smiling. And everything is happening in slow, like so slow motion. The guy in the tuxedo t-shirt has a camera from the 1940s.
Exactly.
And
sort of like, what? Why?
This is going in the yearbook. And meanwhile, they're pulling the string. Oh, God.
And Chris is licking her lips.
I mean, it is vile how excited she is about it.
She is the most awful person in this movie.
And she pulls that rope.
Well, and Sue is like, and the pig blood comes down, and it's just, and for a second, everyone stares, which you would, and everyone stops clapping, which you also would, and
the second bucket comes down and brains Tommy.
Yep.
Which exactly. Kills him.
In the book, he's straight up killed him.
I think it kills him here, too.
Well, if he didn't die right away, he soon will.
Does he not die?
Well, no, he dies.
He dies.
Well, he dies eventually, like everyone else in that gym.
But it didn't look like it hit him head on. But either way, he's not there to calm her down or anything. And that's when Carrie breaks.
Well, and it's hard to tell if everyone's truly laughing at her. Or if she's imagined that because she broke.
I don't think they are laughing.
I don't think that... My reading is that they aren't laughing.
My reading was a few people started to laugh who were the bad girls.
Yes.
And then no one else starts. It's like those people who try to do a standing ovation and it doesn't kick in. Because, like, I think everyone realizes how horrible it is.
Yes.
Except for those assholes. And then the chaos starts because she's not in... Like... This is so when people were complaining about like Rey in the new Star Wars movies, it was because there wasn't a training montage, yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. What's interesting here is because there's no training, she has no control really. Mm-hmm. She loses it and everyone dies. So there's a graduating class of one this year.
Yeah, I think the plan was she would.
Oh, wait, one, because Carrie does die.
That's right.
I think the plan was, I'm going to ruin all your clothes, the fire hoses. Then, wait a minute, water conducts electricity.
Well, and for the rest of the movie, I don't think she blinks. She's just got that big old...
She's got her eyes flip wide open. She's got blood all over her face and her body and her dirty pillows.
Your dirty pillows.
I'll never not enjoy saying
that. It's the worst and best euphemism for breasts.
It really is. I mean, as a gay man, I just absolutely love that. Dirty pillows.
I also love how somehow at this point, Travolta and Evil are outside watching this happen. Right? And they're just like, oh no, what have we done?
She glances at the doors. The door is shut. And you know, like, up until now, every time Carrie uses her powers, you have that violin screech sting. Okay? Yeah. So now she starts to use her powers. Doors slam shut. They can't get them open. The hose unravels. Water starts going everywhere.
And the world catches fire.
Everything catches fire.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Travolta is like incredibly drunk. He's like, I better start driving, which we'll get to. And now everyone is dead. She walks out and starts walking home, practically floating down the street.
Yes. And of course, I mean, there has to be comeuppance for Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a Pinto. What must be a Pinto car?
What must be a water balloon filled with gasoline? I've never seen anything like it. There's like, you know, we should... Carrie's walking... By the way...
Look, there's Carrie. Let's run her down.
The greatest first responders in history. This girl is walking down the middle of the street covered in blood, and the fire trucks and the police just drive past
her.
Right? And Travolta's like, I should run this bitch down.
Exactly.
And she causes the car to explode. Woo! Now we're talking a movie. This is incredible.
It was amazing.
Oh, God help me. And by the way, what happens is she blows it up and it rolls over and then it settles on the bottom and then she makes it blow up again.
Exactly. Because they're not dead enough.
They are not. They are crispy critters. It's amazing. Meanwhile, she's like, well, time to go bathe now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's bookends.
And like you said, the bookends, you know.
And that's when she finally snaps out of it. And then she starts crying.
As you would. Yeah. You've just killed 400 people.
Well, she realized what she did. She lost control.
Oh, God. And her mom is like behind the door in her nightgown.
Well, also, I mean, it's important to note that when she snaps after the blood falls on her, she's hearing her mom's voice in her head. They're all going to laugh at you. And it's just like, and it's one of the iconic, there are several iconic portions of this movie. One of them, of course, is the blood-soaked Carrie. Another one is Dirty Pillows.
The Dirty Pillows.
Another one, and the other one is they're all going to laugh. They're all going to laugh at you. They're all going to laugh at you.
I mean, that shower scene at the beginning is top-notch.
That one too, yes.
Well, I mean, and it's not just for the weird nudity. It's for the throwing 600 tampons on the poor girl.
Plug it up.
And she's like crying in the corner, and they're just throwing pads at her. It's out of this world. But so when she gets home, all the lights are out. We should mention that whether or not they have electricity is kind of in question because it's always candlelight.
But there are a lot of candles set up.
There are hundreds of candles lit, like they're about to film the Red Shoe Diaries. And she goes upstairs. She strips down and starts taking this bath where, and again, how do I put this? It's De Palma. There's some sexuality to the scene. But like at the beginning, as Charlie mentioned, we see a lot of nudity, but we don't see any of Carrie's nudity, right? She's always covering herself up. She's washing herself in a way that her foot must be on the shower so that her crotch is hidden, her breasts are covered. But here we actually see her naked because she has now achieved a level of womanhood, right? And so she goes in from this baptism, this time a baptism by blood, a very feminine symbol, right? A baptism in blood. She gets naked, she comes out clean, and we actually see her naked because she is now a woman. A new form is born. She is a woman. And her mother, who's tried for years to repress this, has to put a stop to it.
Correct. Because what is more dangerous than a woman embracing her femininity?
Exactly. It's I mean, filmmaking by a good director, man.
I'm just saying, I mean, they're not trying to say anything by having the church being threatened by a woman claiming her feminine power. That's not subtle at all.
No. And it's just, and again, like we said at the beginning, it's another scene where she's bathing and it's reversed because she's now covering in blood and washing it away as opposed to the blood appearing. But she then puts on a very matronly nightgown like her mother would be wearing. She's trying to be the girl she was, and that's not going to last for another minute.
She wants to go back and she can't.
You can't reachieve that. And her mom's hiding behind the door. She's like, oh, you need a hug. And there is a fucking...
a hug with a knife.
While speechifying about how her husband raped her and she enjoyed it. And that's how Carrie came to be.
Oh, good.
There is so much dysfunctionality here.
Oh, let me just embrace you, my daughter. And hey, a knife. Oh, my goodness gracious.
I mean, this is just horrifying on so many levels. This is taboo. Yeah. A mother trying to kill their child.
Yeah.
And she mentions that she had wanted to before, apparently.
I mean.
Now I wanted to send you back to God.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, they have spent tropes about woman and motherhood and the natural bond between a child and their mother. And with this, they are just completely upending that and really showing the unnatural nature of her mother.
Yeah. And so she pulls a knife out. She stabs Carrie kind of in the back underneath the ribs. And Carrie kind of tumbles down the stairs, bleeding once again. And again, we have this appropriately virginal white, once again, spattered in blood. And when they get, Carrie crawls out, tries to go out the back door, but it's locked. And so this is when she uses her powers and starts throwing the knives at the mother to recreate the statue of Saint Sebastian.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Her head is kind of lolling around and ends up with her eyes wide, looking off to the right.
Another terrifying scene.
Yeah, because we should mention this. You mentioned the actress Piper Laurie already. But like, she when Carrie is reached quote unquote her womanhood, you know, her hair is back, it's not covering her eyes, she's standing a little straighter, looking a little bit more feminine. They're not that different in age. And so that achieves that level of, I'm a woman now too, Mom. You can't boss me around in that same way, right? And it's tragic because when you're a teenager, you have that little bit of rebellion in you. Mm-hmm. Carrie never got to have it. And so now it's a full-on onslaught as opposed to a little rebellion. And so the mother dies with her arms out, her head to the side, her eyes wide, just like Saint Sebastian here. And then the house eats itself like fucking Poltergeist.
Yeah, exactly. It just collapses in on itself.
Yeah, she retreats back to her prayer closet and then pulls the whole building down onto her.
Which dissolves into lava rocks, I guess?
Something catches fire. I guess they do have electricity.
But we will mention here, too, the end of this makes may or may not actually happen. We cut to Sue, who's apparently the other survivor, because the gym teacher shoved her into the wall and then threw her down the stairs, and so she was out of the building at the time. And so the mom's sitting by her bed. She's been in a coma for days. Sue walks to put flowers at the old Carrie house, the White House, when a hand pulls her down, and she wakes up in a screaming cold sweat. So we don't actually know what happened to the White House. We don't know how the movie ends, and we don't know anything other than Sue survived and she is out of her mind.
Exactly. Well, I mean, survivor's guilt.
Right.
I mean, this is like traumatic for her.
Yeah. And it's just, it's interesting to see how that all fit together. There's one, I don't know if it's a joke or not, but Carrie takes out all the knives and tries to pull the mom into the closet with her, but forgets one of the knives in her hand. And so her hand is stuck and she's pulling it. All and right. It goes boing as it falls free. I laughed at that. But then using her power, she pulls the house down. And that's kind of the end of this.
Yeah.
Hell of a film.
I mean, it really was. I mean, it said so much.
It's good. I mean, we don't talk about movies like this a lot. We'll do more this season. But like, there's just something about what it says about letting kids grow up, about achieving adulthood, about the fear of fundamentalism. Not that religion is wrong, just being fundamental about anything. Mm-hmm. It has something to say. Interpersonal relationship, I don't know. And just young performances from people like Sissy Spacek and John Travolta and Piper Laurie and... hell, Brian De Palma. These are all very early in their careers, and they're excellent. I'll just give my opinion first, because I always do it last, and this time you guys can give me the hammer home. But see it. They've made several remakes. I think one sequel. They're not worth it. Mm-mm. Watch this original. It's not hard to find. Occasionally it goes off streaming, but even when it does, it's easy to get a copy of this. It's 100% worth it. Early De Palma is always great. I like De Palma. I like all these people, in fact. I like how the movie ends on a question mark. But yeah, it's one of those movies that when you see, you're like, wow, a lot of things rip this off. I always think you should watch this movie rather than let people rip it off without credit. Charlie, what do you think?
So I have to say it's an amazing movie. I mean, Stephen King, you know, notoriously does not like most of his adaptations. This one, he endorsed. He fully believed in it. Brian De Palma did a fantastic, told a timeless tale. Didn't have to stretch hard because, you know, bullies and being tortured. And Carrie not really having anyone but herself to take care of. You know, it's basically like it was a horror story because not because she had telekinetic powers, but because she was tortured and had no one. And it expressed itself through grief and rage.
Yeah.
And at the end, you know, she died. She died because of it. And so it's just a beautiful story about a woman claiming her feminine power, but also being punished for it.
Yeah.
Matt. Time for some, you know, heresy here. I thought it was a little padded. Like the scene, the tuxedo scene,
no.
The dance scene goes on, goes on. Like like they could have tightened it up a little bit. Then again, Carrie was a pretty short novel. He had to buff it up so it wasn't a novella anymore. So, I mean, I didn't like it as much as these two did, but it is a good movie to see at least once. It's not very long.
Fair enough. So thanks for listening. Next week, we're going to completely switch gears. But, you know, happy Halloween if you've listened to this right as it came out. November is usually a month where we do kind of, I don't know, just fun stuff. We don't usually have a theme. So we're going to do a couple Schwarzenegger movies back to back just to change gears. And next month, or next week rather, we're doing True Lies. So stay tuned next week as we watch the Tom Arnold classic. Jim Cameron classic. Let's do a Jim Cameron classic, True Lies. Thanks, everyone. Bye. Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Ner Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Ner Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons / licenses by / 4.0. Thanks. Thank you.